Well, good evening, everyone. What a treat. What a bigger treat. This is amazing. Let's do introductions around. Some Chikoji people have suddenly appeared who have never been here before. This is wonderful.
Judy.
Greg. Joe.
Leslie.
John.
Doug.
Ito.
Marie.
Jeffrey.
Viola.
Wendy.
Ron.
Nestor.
Well, this is wonderful. It's been many years. Old friend. I'm taken. I'm amazed. It's so good to see you all. So very, very good. I've been thinking a lot about Chikoji, especially because I'm just back from Sonoma Mountain Zen Center, and they're rather like Chikoji. They're up in the mountains. They're on 80 acres, so it's immense and utterly beautiful. Just madrone trees and fir trees, and even where the fire was, the trees are bursting with green at the top. And they're working hard to open the space to everyone so that they can have a sitting place, just like Chikoji. They're doing very well, finally. They've had a big struggle, but they're doing really well now. They meet in an old barn, but they're about to replace the old barn with a real zendo. And Violet and I had a really interesting time up there. We learned a lot. Roshi there is an old friend of Koban. Koban was a big help to him. When Suzuki Roshi died, Richard Baker and Bill Kwong were both supposed to be transmitted and both supposed to be a part of the Zen Center. And he died before Kwong could finish up. And so Koban did the job for him. So I used to see him in Koban's house in the evening when I would go with an errand, and this big man was with Koban, with finding Koban, and doing something very mysterious. I knew it was mysterious, I just didn't know what it was. So there's this heart connection, I think, and a kind of family connection with him, because he was so grateful to Koban for doing what he did, and so loved Koban for all the reasons that we love him. So it was lovely. It was like joining another family that's our family. It felt very, very good. We are studying the Genjo Koan by way of Okamura Zenji. And we haven't got very far. We're on page 62 and the fifth paragraph. When he's calling this piece of the chapter Buddha Actualizing Buddha Without Thinking So. I had several conversations with people who've been trying hard to be Buddha, and it's kind of impossible. It's just a thought thing, and Buddha is not a thought. It's not an idea. So if you start to think of of yourself as Buddha, it's a mistake. It's doesn't happen like that. And that's what this paragraph is. When Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they don't need to perceive that they are Buddhas. However, they are enlightened Buddhas and they continue actualizing Buddha. In seeing color and hearing sound with body and mind, although we perceive them intimately, the perception is not like reflections in a mirror or the moon in water. When one side is illuminated, the other side is dark. We are that way. Our mind is that way. There is always one side and another side. Okamura says, as individuals, we see things as good or bad, and we choose the good and avoid the bad. To do this, we create a copy of reality to guide our minds, although we still continue living within absolute reality beyond thought. Does that make sense? Our thoughts about reality, he compares to the atlas of the earth. We make a picture, a flat page, and we draw the earth, but it's all wrong. It's all the wrong side, and it's just an idea, a suggestion. But the earth is a live thing. Our life and Buddha life is alive. Size, shape, or directional representation of the earth must be distorted to make an atlas. In the same way, a human being's mental picture of the world cannot be a perfect copy of reality. Each one of us has our own picture. Even if we got rid of all of our conditioning and had exactly the same eyes, we're still in a different place. So we would each have a different view, and we would never be able to see all of it, or even a tiny bit of it, really. We're only seeing a minuscule bit, moment by moment by moment. And from that, we put together a picture and call it our world. And each of us is the world. He said, within the mental map, there are things we think are good, useful, or valuable, and other things we think are bad, useless, or worthless, such as weeds. We take for granted that the fabricated picture of the world in our minds is the world itself. We think my system of values is the best one. Other ones are a mess. They're all messed up. This is our basic delusion, he calls it. And yet we do have to be very carefully discriminating about our views. So there, that's the other side of this, that we don't just throw away our worldview or our values. We need to be extremely discriminating about how we decide what is good and what is bad. It's built into us to know this. It changes as our life changes, and if we change with it, we have a more clarity as we stumble through our life. He says, thinking can only produce a distorted mental copy of the world, and this copy is based on karmic experiences. But when we let go of thought, we understand that the copy in our minds is not reality itself. So we don't have to blindly trust our thoughts, and we can instead inquire further into the nature of reality. So it's not that we don't inquire into our thoughts, but we don't have to blindly trust them. And as we sit in zazen, we see our thoughts, and they just keep spurting through our minds, squirting through our minds, one after another. If we pay attention, we see that some of them are, maybe they're brilliant, and some of them are just plain ridiculous and stupid and truly blind and ignorant and even wrong, really wrong. We have it all in us, and we have the opportunity in zazen to experience our own mind as it flows. We don't have to come down on ourselves for what comes out of us. We can pay close attention to what comes out of us and see more clearly just how it is, not only with our own mind, but with everybody else. It's a lot easier to forgive other people once we understand our own mind. Once we see ourselves, we begin to see others and how things are with us. It's not always easy. He says, our zazen is not a method of correcting the distortion of our conceptual maps. Instead, we just let go of the map and sit down. We neither negate anything nor affirm anything in zazen. We can do this because we're only just facing a wall. The wall is not telling us anything. So how can we even come to any conclusion? Every time we have a thought, we look up and we see just a wall. It's the best part of our zazen, really, is that we don't get inspired or distracted by anything, because it's just nothing there. At least as we begin to sit. If we sit for a long time, sometimes the wall becomes transparent and we begin to feel everything is sitting with us. The whole world is sitting with us. We begin to feel how the trees outside and the cars going by, everything is a part of our zazen. He says, whether practicing in daily life or zazen, whether practicing in daily life or zazen, there is no way to conceive of being a Buddha or being enlightened. There is no way we can judge ourselves, because we can't step outside of ourselves into objectivity. We are a subject. We are subjective. Sub meaning under, and ject meaning thrown. So we're thrown under, and objective means out, thrown out. So the outside part is the object, the thing, and the inside part is the subjective, the thrown back one. So we can't create an object of ourself. We can do that for others. We can create. And Martin Buber made a whole effort of explaining how we objectify even the most precious of our friends and loves as a thing, instead of something very precious and not a thing at all. But as Okamura says, there's no separation between subject and object. And that is Dogen's point in the Genjo Koan. He is trying to express that in many, many different ways. All these wonderful metaphors, these poetic pieces, are all about how subject and object are really just one way. One life, you could say. So he says, so without worrying about becoming a Buddha or attaining enlightenment, we just keep trying to settle ourselves more deeply into immeasurable reality. Or as Fong Roshi was saying, just sit down and shut up. That's all it takes. Just be quiet. Zazen itself is this immeasurable reality that is the foundation for our practice in the Zendo and in daily life. In Zazen, we don't grasp or engage anything. We just are as we are, that's all. We just be. When Buddhas are truly Buddhas, says Dogen, they don't need to perceive they are Buddhas. However, they are enlightened Buddhas and they continue actualizing Buddha. Okamura says this sentence means that we cannot judge whether we are Buddha or not, because true reality is beyond such judgments. This is a huge relief, isn't it? We don't have to worry about this part of it. We can just relax and breathe. Relax and enjoy our life. Still, the simultaneous existence of individuality and universality in our lives is the truth of our existence. This is another way of saying subject and object. Individual, each little piece all by itself, of us and everything else. And the universality that is connecting all of it. Every single last atom is a part of every single last atom. There is no separation. And what a big relief that is. He says, we cannot say that any of us as individuals are Buddhas because we are living beings who are interdependent with all beings and given life by all beings. We forget that as individuals, how completely dependent we are on every single thing in the world around us. Starting with the floor that's holding us, with the air that we're breathing, with our friends and relatives, with our past and our future. Everything that we can think of is supporting us, holding us. We're not alone. No one can truthfully say, I've become a Buddha, because there's no such thing as an independent I that can do things outside of its connection to others. Yet when we place ourselves on the ground of reality, letting go of our individuality within practice, our practice manifests Buddha. So Dogen always told us that we don't need a Buddha in the sitting hall, because each one who is sitting is Buddha itself. Not himself and herself, but itself. That the whole of it is sitting as sitting practice itself, as Zazen. However, although we are living within Buddha's life and our practice can manifest Buddha, we are still deluded beings, and we ourselves create the cycle of suffering in samsara. This is, as Uchiyama Roshi said, the scenery of our lives. We must therefore accept that we are deluded so that we can practice with the reality of our lives. Buddha doesn't mean transcendence. It doesn't mean discovering some golden space where we can be pure and simplified and remade into something. We are what we are. And I always think, as we proceed in our life, that we, if we're sincere and practice well, that we boil down like a good sauce into something really very tasty and condensed. We don't become someone else, we just become more what we are, our being flourishes in this way, and it becomes a gift to everyone, which is the whole point. The point of our practice is not to make ourselves into something perfect, but to open ourselves to the world and to the suffering of the world, so that we're available and can be of some help. So maybe we can stop there. That's the end of that piece. And then he goes on to the moon and the water, but we'll talk about that next week. Or no, maybe we won't. John's coming next week. Oh, maybe there is one more. Okay. All right. Whatever. We're a team, so. So, are there questions and comments? It all makes perfect sense.
But there was something about absolute reality and our relative reality, and how I just like the imagery of how, like, all relative reality is within absolute reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just, I don't know, I just thought it was interesting for me. So.
That the subjective is, well, the subjective and the objective are all of a piece of reality, within reality. Yes.
And you can't see absolute reality.
No. That's the untalkabout ability of our practice. Though we talk and talk. It's terrible how much we talk. But we have to do that too. It's really important. But not too much. Not too much.
there's thought and having thought and not having thought, so that we can experience it all. Now, experiencing it all means we use everything we got,
mm-hmm.
right? Our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind.
Absolutely.
As full bore as possible.
We hear with our eyes, and we look with our ears, and we taste with our skin, and etc. That the whole thing is just one big vital activity and attention, full of attention. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
People get stuck on the thoughts, and it's, here we go, all the rest of this coming in.
Yes. Yeah. No problem. But life is difficult. So it takes some study, as Dogen says. He often says, now study this. Pay attention. Study this. Really look at it. See what you see. But don't think about it too much, because you get lost in your thinking if you do. It's difficult because most of us have been very well educated, and so we've been taught to think logically and deeply, and we're really good at it. So to realize that we can exist beyond that thinking as well as with it. We don't need to throw it away. It's our most precious gift, you could say. It's why we have airplanes in the sky. But there's a whole another big piece of us that is essential to know and to practice and be. And that's what we're doing. Is knowing and practicing and being just like this. So I'm glad you all are here. We are going to go up into the Santa Cruz Mountains on Saturday to a farm and a meadow and a forest that is utterly beautiful in the springtime, and we're going to sit from 9 to 4. So if you can come, please do. It's a big treat. We have lunch together, there's a Dharma talk, there's Doksan in the morning. So it's our yearly May event when we go up and celebrate the spring at Connie's house. Are there other things that we need to know about? Jeffrey.
We should have a board member, a board meeting.
Oh.
One thing. So, that could be something that we put out. We need to talk about the increase in our rent and some of those issues.
Okay.
Also, I have insurance waivers people can sign tonight. So Tessa Hunter, who is our person with the friend's house, has left me with insurance waivers. We've done this in the past.
Yes.
So those are two really important items that need to be talked about in the weeks to come.
Okay. The Quakers have been so kind and generous to us.
Indeed.
We actually raised the rent because we thought it was too small at one point. We were just so... But now they're raising the rent, and they've never done that before, so...
Well, the monthly rent has not gone up, but by about $20. But it's your Saturday, your half day.
Oh, half day and whole day. Okay. John?
We also need to meet at the board level to discuss the upper limit for officers to execute on their own. We talked about that the last board meeting.
Oh, right.
Got around to doing it.
Yes. Does everybody know who's on the board? No? Probably not. So Jeffrey is the head of the board. What's it called?
It's called CEO.
CEO. Oh, boy.
It's called chair. Don't be too excited. Chair. It's just called chair.
Wendy's. And who else? Wendy, you're the treasurer.
Secretary treasurer.
And David in San Diego is on the board. And are you still on the board?
John.
Yes.
Director and Carolyn Dilling.
Yeah. Yes. So it's a good group. Leslie?
This might sound funny, but I have maybe a board agenda item. Even though I'm not on the board, but as the session coordinator, Wendy and I were talking about who ought to sign the contracts with Chicote. So
I discussed that.
Oh, you did, John.
Okay, sorry, I forgot to back to you.
I thought maybe it was missing.
Good.
Brought up with the board.
Good. So that's another thing to keep in mind, that Sashin is coming up. It's September, but it's already in the works. It's already, Leslie is putting it all together.
We're moving.
With
lots of help.
Great. That's great. John?
We celebrated a milestone here, Wendy, that first e-postcard form 990 filed last week. So it's a
good.
It's a quite an achievement.
Good. Well, we're official now. Yeah. Well, thank you all for your effort. It's a big contribution. Yeah. Well, let's have our 1 minute sit.